honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
That, of course, is the most famous speech President Franklin D. Roosevelt ever gave, addressing the nation on December 8, 1941. A close second would be his radio address from June 6, 1944, a lengthy prayer for those participating in D-Day that was heard over airwaves just like this all those years ago. And now, that prayer is soon to be immortalized in bronze in Washington, D.C. Just this past week, the words of that prayer were cast in a bronze plaque by Matthews International of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Soon that plaque will be installed at the National World War II Memorial. We've heard that prayer a few times on this program, and I do have it linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. When I FaceTimed earlier this week with 102-year-old Frank Paredes, he asked me if he could go back to Washington. He had such a memorable trip there with Central Valley Honor Flight 8 years ago. Soon, all the honor flights from around the country will have a chance to read FDR's words there at the memorial. And I want you to listen to some of Frank Paredes' words right now. He was one of four brothers to serve in World War II, but one of 16 children growing up in Arizona in a family with Mescalero Apache heritage. Frank had already worked in copper mines and crewed a tuna fishing boat off the coast of South America before joining the Army a month after his 20th birthday.
That was in September the 16th of 1941. I had to find something for me to do, something to be helpful. So that's what I did. I joined the military. They sent me to Hawaii. I was on my way to Manila to join the troops in Manila. So I was waiting in Pearl Harbor, Schofield Barracks actually, on a cadre to go, waiting for more people to show up to go to Manila. But that's when I got caught, you know. Incidentally, a friend of mine, his name was Max Druin. He went in the Navy and I went in the Army. He was aboard the USS West Virginia. I was in Schofield Barracks. So on Saturday night, December the 6th, I went to Pearl Harbor to visit with him. And we had a few beers, you know, and chatted, you know, about the hometown and this and that. I told Max, I says, I got to catch the last shuttle to Schofield Barracks. Otherwise, I'll be stranded here, you know. And I do help the priest say Mass on Sunday mornings. So I caught my shuttle, went back, and I made it okay. 8 o'clock, about 5 minutes to eight, I was on my way to church for Mass. And all of a sudden, I heard a big noise, and the sirens went off. And they says, this is not a drill. This is not a drill. All personnel report to your stations. I didn't have a station, but we did have machine guns set up, you know. So what I did, I manned the first machine gun that I could find, and it was a Twin 50 on a Heinz mount. I spotted this torpedo bomber. He was probably about maybe 150, 200 feet up in the air. I could see the pilot, and I took a burst at him, and I missed him. Then I gave him a lead, and then I took another burst at him, and I smoked him. I don't know whether he went down, but I'm pretty sure he did went down because he started going towards the ocean. So that's where everything went haywire. So I started picking up, fighting fires, helping out, you know, with whatever I did. And I helped for about maybe 7 or 8 days. And then I got on, they put me on a ship, and I was on my way to Australia.
Well, let me come back to that, because you described it, and I know you lived it, and you probably tell these stories a few times. But you're a 21-year-old kid, you're on your way to Mass, and all of a sudden, World War II begins for America. And you're right there in the thick of it, and you hop on a machine gun and shoot a Japanese plane. What did this feel like? Because I imagine that's a pretty big shock to your system, that all of a sudden you're at war, and the world is crazy. How did you deal with that?
I know it was crazy. So I joined the military for one thing and one thing only, to do what I had to do for my country. And that's what I did.
Was it scary for you in that moment? I mean, this is day one. I mean, you knew maybe something was going to happen at some point, but now it's actually here right in your face.
Yeah, it was scary. But the way I figured, you live at one day at a time. And that's the way it went, you know, all through my military life.
And you said you were helping out for 7 or 8 days in the aftermath of the Japanese attack. And there aren't a whole lot of people left with us anymore that actually saw those things with their own two eyes. What are some of the things that you saw and experienced in those days following the attack that you still remember today, that in when you close your eyes, you can still picture exactly what that looked like?
Well, to me, you know, I still have dreams about that. And those dreams, you know, make you, to me, they make you go on and on, live your life as you want to live it.
Were you around Schofield Barracks cleaning up, or did you go down to the harbor and help with pulling bodies out of the water and all that?
Yes, I went to, I start pulling bodies, limbs, you know, arms, legs, you know, and heads, and it was awful. Thinking about it, you know, it makes me cry. The poor people, innocent people that got caught in a turmoil like that.
And I know there are other moments, because this is just the start of the war and you were in for a while, but when you think back specifically about December 7th, is there part of you that says, yeah, I could have been one of those more than 2,000 that died there?
Yes, I lost a few friends. I lost, especially in Schofield Barracks, I lost a few friends there. And then aboard the USS Arizona, I lost a cousin. His name was William Webb. So when I went back to Pearl Harbor in 1990, I went to the memorial, and there was Japanese people going to the USS Arizona, and they were speaking in Japanese, and they were descendants of the pilots that had bombed Pearl Harbor, because, you know, I had a lot of Japanese friends here before the war. And I learned a little bit about Japanese, you know. I could understand some of it, but not all of it. But they had, you know, people there too, you know, wanted to go see the memorial. And then the memorial, you could still see oil coming out. And I think that'll go on forever, because there's a lot of people that are buried there, you know, underwater.
Is your cousin one of them?
Yes.
And at the time, back in 1941, I'm sure there was some uncertainty at first. You guys didn't know who had survived, who hadn't. When did you find out that your cousin had died, and what did that do to you?
I found out that when after the war, I went to my cousin's, to his mom, you know. Her name was Clotilde. She says, I'm very proud of my son. He died a hero. Anyway, that's about all I can remember about him, you know. But getting back to picking up bodies, parts of bodies, taking them, you know, to grave registration, it took a while, you know, to get everything, you know, squared away.
And I know you'd been exposed to a lot through working in the mines and doing your tuna trip to South America and all that. So you'd seen a lot and experienced a lot, but I can't imagine that being easy to see this death and destruction all around you. How did you cope with that? How did you deal with it at the time?
Well, you have to deal with whatever comes along. You have to deal with it, you know, one way or the other. Some people, as a rule, you know, deals like what I went through, they'd go bananas. But I kept my wits, you know, and I'm doing fine as of now, you know. And I'm still doing great.
What's the secret? How do you do that?
You would have to ask me that. I think it's my Indian heritage. As I was growing up, I did a lot of things what the Indians did.
When I talk to guys who are at Pearl Harbor, and I talk to guys who just served in the war, period, remember Pearl Harbor. I mean, it was three words that seemed to hold a lot of weight for them. For you, as you go on, and we're going to hear some of your adventures in the rest of the war, how big of a motivation was what you had seen and experienced at Pearl Harbor? What did Remember Pearl Harbor mean to you?
It meant to me that Remember Pearl Harbor, keep on going and give them hell. And that's what we did.
Indeed, they did. And Frank still attacks life with that same spirit at age 102. As we approach yet another anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor, I'm reminded of so many Pearl Harbor survivors we've had the privilege of meeting on Hometown Heroes who are no longer here to tell their stories. But the reason so many of them told those stories so diligently for so long is encapsulated in the motto of the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association: Remember Pearl Harbor, keep America alert. That eternal vigilance they advocate is underscored by the sacrifice of more than 2,400 Americans around the island of Oahu on that day of infamy. Another powerful reminder that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.